Holding on Yodoma Bays, 5-6 lines from the bottom. That's your job. Okay, so we said in the Mishnah that you have a shtar that was written or signed or whatever it is in that was prepared in Akoris Shogoyim and Goyish Shakur. And we said that any shtar is, even if it's signed by Goyim, is kosher, except for Gittim and Shakur HaAvodim. And then we had Rav Shimon saying even those. So if Rav Shimon and after that Rav Shimon, the question is, why are they kosher? All of them make Krisus, you know. Goyim, who are signed on the shtar, are not subject to Krisus. They're not shy after all the dinim of Gittim, because as we said the other day, the concept of divorcing a woman Davka, of a couple divorcing Davka using a written document, is something only for Jewish people. Goyim don't have that. The Rambam says they can just any time they want to separate, they can just separate without anything formal. And Tosfos points out, not just the...
According to Torah?
Yes, that's what we're talking about, according to Torah. And Tosfos points out, not only they're not B'nai Krisus, they're also not B'nai Agus. So Goyim are not Goyim, as we said yesterday, are not usually considered Kosher Agim. So Rav Shimon has taken Rav Elazar's opinion to its logical conclusion. We've said a number of times already that Rav Elazar holds the Edim Mesira that are the essential thing. They're the ones that cause the cutting off of the get. It's not the ones who are signed on it that matter so much. Therefore, fine, as long as you have Edim Mesira, so as long as you have it was given in front of Jewish Edim, it doesn't matter who's written in it. Question is, why? Haven't we said before that Rav Elazar agrees that if the get is, you can tell from the text of the get itself that it's forged, that there's something the matter with it, that's possible. In this case, Melech, there's no Edim on it at all, and you're only using Edim and Sira, fine, Rav Elazar would say Edim and Sira Kaji. But if there's Edim and Simon who are apostle, then we said the other day that it's no good. You might rely on, Rashi says, because you might rely on them and forget that you need Edim and Sira and end up giving it over in front of the, usually the Edim who are signed in a shtar are usually also the ones who observe it being given. Like this, if you have possible Edim signed in it, so if you have no Edim, you know there's no Edim in it, and therefore you'll give it over with Edim and Sira, and you'll know they'll have to be Jews. But if you have Edim signed in it, you may forget and think that you can just hand it over in their presence, and that would be possible, according to the laws of Edim and Sira. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos the other day had said that the psul is rather that if you sign the get, if you allow to sign the get shalom l'shma, in this case, go even start signing it, necessarily they're doing it shalom l'shma, you may come to write the get shalom l'shma as well. And then one or the other, either the writing or the signatures, have to be l'shma, even if one's in the laws. Okay. The answer is, ha'chav ma'askin and b'shemus muvhakin. Yes, but you know what we're talking about over here? We're talking about very distinctive goyish names. As we said yesterday, that you have certain names that are, we'll have some examples here, and we'll have some more examples on Amud Beis, of names that are only used by Goyim. So what happens, therefore? So if you find, or not only, but it's very uncommon to find Jews that have those names. So therefore, if you find those names written in a get, you're going to know that you're going to know that they're Goyim, and that you can't rely on them for Edim Mesira. Hey, if you don't be shameless, we'll talk. Because they're remarkable, exactly. So again, you know, to put it in modern terms, if you have a get that's signed by Stuart and Phil, you may not know whether they're Jews or Goyim. But if it's signed by John and Christopher, they're probably Goyim. The Hechidam Hashemis of Hakim, what are some examples? Amar Papa, Goyim, Hurmiz, Ba'abudina Bar Shiksoi, or Bar Kidri, or Bati, V'Nakim Una. So Tosfos goes through the details with a number of these in the case of the first one, Hurmiz. Tosfos says that actually it should be Hurmin. You have a number of places, in the Gemara it talks about the various things that the Persians of those days believed in. So you have Hurmin, which is the name of a shed, versus Hurmiz with a Zion, Tosfos says is actually the Persian name for Hashem, and therefore there's no reason Jews wouldn't use it. But the Girsa that we have over here, though, I mean, the Persians actually believe in a god of good and a god of evil, and their god of good was called Hurmiz. So that would fit well with the Girsa that we have over here. It's the name of a Goyish god. Nobody's going to name their son. No Yid is going to use that as a name.
So in that case,
it's a Shem Mupak. If you see a get signed by a Hurmiz, you know, or Hurmin, according to Tosfos, you know it was a Goy. Or you can be almost certain it was a Goy. Abu Dina, actually, Tosfos says, Shabsai is an interesting, Bar Shibsoi is an interesting one. On the face of it, these are meant to be two different names, Abu Dina and Bar Shibsoi. So Tosfos points out, the name Shabsi is a Jewish name. Shabsai is a Goyish name. So what's the difference? So there are poskim who have the gear say in Tosfos that the difference is indeed whether it's with or without a yud, and therefore they say that when you're writing the name Shabsi in a get, you must write it without a yud, which in fact is how it's spelled in Tanakh. Shabsi without the aleph. So Shin Bei Sof Yud. On the other hand, that would be the Jewish form. The Goyish form would be Shabsai with an aleph, which would be named after the planet Saturn or whatever. There are other Mepharshim say that that's not it, that you can, in fact, that Shabsai written with an aleph is valid as well, because the aleph helps show, otherwise, if you have a yud over there, you don't know whether it's Shabsi, as many people pronounce it, or Shabsai, as it's really supposed to be, with a patach, and then a yud patachorif, as they call it, in the poskim. So therefore, they say writing it with an aleph is not the problem, rather the distinction the Gemara and Tosfos are making over here is between Shabsai and Shibsai. Shibsai, Tosfos says, is based on the name of a shed. So again, no Jews are going to give that as another name for their children, whereas Goyim might. Batai or Bati, we have them in here in the Gemara again. Bakidri, Tosfos doesn't point out anything because there's nothing in particular to point out. So Tosfos says that Batai is a Goyish name, but Bati without the Aleph would be a Jewish name. We find that in a couple places in Shas. I saw one idea, and Steinsaltz has it in his Gemara, I don't know where he got it from, that Bati, spelled like this, Batai, whatever spelled like this with an aleph, is actually the name of a Goyish fish. A tray of fish. So therefore, the Goyim might well name after that, but Jews wouldn't, because why would you name after a tray of fish?
You got a kosher fish.
Well, no, you have, for example, official, but also consider the last name Ham. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But you're not gonna have any Jews named catfish, for example. You know, so yeah. So why are we mentioning these names? There's many Goyish names out there. So Rashi says that all of these are the names of Goyish Dayanim. So what does that mean? So Maram Shif says it doesn't necessarily mean. I mean, that we're not talking about the Dayanim sign on the Shtar. We're talking about Hediotis. We're talking about the Edomor sign on the Shtar. But we're giving these as examples for people well-known Goyish names in those times. Also, Maram Shif says the possibility, given what Tosfos is saying, that so many of them are very similar to Jewish names, what we're saying is, even if they're similar, but if you have a name, which there's a certain form which is only used by Jews, and a certain form which can be used by Jews or Goyim, and a different one that's only used by Goyim, like over here, the difference in Shabsai and Shibsai or whatever, then that's fine. That's enough of a siman muvhak to know that these people are Goyim because they're spelling it or pronouncing it the Goyish way rather than the Jewish way. I can't think of an example in modern terms, but you could imagine it. Okay. So the question is, Avoshemus Shein Mubhakim, so what would happen then, according to the Pshimon, if you have the names are not distinctive? My, so what would be Loi? You would say, according to him, it's no good, it's possible. Yehachiv, so Adatani Sefer, so what are we saying, what is the Pshimon saying at the end of the Mishnah? Loi Husku, Elavis Manshanasa Behedia, so we're only mentioning that Shtoris are possible when they're signed by Goyim, if they were made by Hedia, if they were not made in a Goyish court, but rather just by private Goyish people, or an informal court or whatever. The question is, instead of making that distinction between Arkois and Hediotis, why not make that distinction even within our choice? Bamedvar Mamurin, Bishemus Muhokin, when do we say that a guest or what have you that was written in a Goyish and signed in a Goyish based in his kosher, only if there are Shemus Muhokin, only if the names are distinctively Goyish, and you have Edim Asira, because then we know you're safe. But if you have undistinctive names, then not, because you may come to rely on them as Edim Asira, as we said before.
The question is,
why is Rav Shimon not making that distinction within the Mishnah? The fact that he's only making the distinction between our Arkois and Hediotis implies that as long as it was prepared in our Arkois, doesn't matter whether the signers are obviously Goyim or not. The answer is Hachim Amikama. That's exactly what he means. When are we talking about the kosher if it was prepared in our Arkois, if it was signed in our Arkois, if it's a distinctive name, but if they're non-distinctive names, Nasif, and we should not have had yet, then we consider it as if they were the equivalent of having been prepared in private hands rather than by a court, upsulin, and then they're possible because in the case of, when it comes to a court, we can rely on Chazak Olay Mari Makshay. They're not going to perjure themselves. They're not going to destroy their credibility by preparing and signing a shtar, by signing at least, signing their presence, whatever, a shtar, where the facts are invalid. But when it comes to private people, when it comes to hediotas, then not necessarily. So Rashi and Tosfos discuss over here, then are we talking in the end here about all shtoris, or are we talking specifically gizir nashim? So Tosfos says that maybe when it comes to a hediot, yes, in principle gizir nashim ought to be kosher. There's no reason we should think that hediotas are going to mess up gizir nashim. They usually have nothing to do with them. But we don't want to accept it because we may confuse them with other kinds of shtoris where there would be an issue. Tosfos is written. But it's a zera we have to make. Tosfos Rid brings up an interesting point that there's a reason maybe to be more machmir with a get when it was done by Hediotis rather than by Akaris, according to Rav Shimon. We're going to learn towards the end of the Masechta, we're going to learn about the concept of get and usa. We've touched on it before, the concept that in certain cases based in can force a husband to give a get. Now, so what happens, for example, you can, and this becomes a very, very live issue nowadays, you can have an issue where a halacha, a person is required to give a get, but the Beis Din doesn't have the ability to force him to. They're able to tell a goyish court to force him to give the get. As long as it was done based on the advice of Beis Din, who in turn are doing it because he's required by halacha, then it's kosher. If a goyim were to be ma'asa him, if they were to force him on their own, it would be a get puzzle. So the difference is, therefore, Tosfos Rid says that when it comes to it, our cars, when it comes to a duly established version based, then we can rely on, they're not going to force them to give the get unless they know there's validity behind it. Mashenk and Hediotis may not do that. They may go and force them on their own understanding, and therefore be a get puzzle.
They would understand that, being Hediotis?
That's the point. They might not understand that. They might not understand. They might think, okay, you know, this woman wants a divorce. We're going to force the husband to do it without realizing that there's only, I mean, look at that, it's not just Goyish had Yotis. I mean, you know, what did you have that whole story 2 weeks ago, right? Where, you know, yeah. The Gemara says, the boy seima, or another possibility, you could say, so far what we said is that the distinction Reb Shimon is making is between Gittin and Shikur Avadim versus other kinds of shtaris. Now we're going to say the very same as Seifa saw in the Gittin Mammon. In Shimon's last statement, Loi Omru, Loi Huitzkur, Loi Bezman Shanasa Behedia, is referring more generally to shtaris. Seifa saw in the Gittin Mammon. We're talking about Gittin, meaning shtaris of Mammon in general. Vahachi Kamer, and then what he means is Loi Huitzkur, Gittin Mammon, Dipsum, and Elo Bezman Shanasa Behedia. When we say that Gittin Mammon apostle is only if they're prepared by Hedia. Meaning, so it's not Shimon saying, sorry, it's the Rabbanan saying. The Rabbanan, who started by saying in the Mishnah that any shtaris that come from our kosher, as even if they're signed by Goyim, when do they say that? When do they say that? It's kosher only if it was made by our kosher, not if it was made by Hediotis. By our kosher, we can rely on Loi Mari Nafshayu, they're not going to perjure themselves. By Hediotis, we can't rely on that. They might take Shochet or whatever. Interesting thing, by the way, the Rif has an expression on it that you can only accept these from our kohes if these kohes are don't take sheichad, which leads the Rosh has a long discussion of what does the Rif mean? Does he mean that we have to generally assume that a goyish based in is going to take sheichad unless we know for a fact, unless we have somebody who can vouch for them or not, or is it the other way around? We can assume that they don't unless we have reason to suspect that they do. But Rambam apparently understands like the first method, because he says if you're gonna be masher a shtar that was written in our cards, one of the preconditions for it to be kosher is that there have to be Jews who are able to vouch for the fact that this is a reliable goyish accord and they don't take bribes. Yeah.
So we just said yesterday that the cards are considered established.
They're considered established, but nevertheless, they may still under the table take bribes. You know, there's a story in Masechta Shabbos. That tells how one time Rabbi Gamliel and his sister had to appear in front of a goyish judge who had a reputation for not taking bribes, but they were able to demonstrate that after all he does take them under the table. Maybe each one of them brought him a bribe of their own, and then in court they're both arguing. First Ima Shala, and his Rabbi Gamliel's sister brings him a bribe, and then he decides according to her. Then Rabbi Gamliel brings him a bribe, so the next day he decides according to him, and then they have a whole discussion over there from which it emerges that the guy takes shows up despite his reputation. Yeah. Tanya, we learn in a place. The Omer of Allah, the Rabbi Yossi, Kach Omer of Shimon HaChacham in Betzidon. Rabbi Shimon said the following, this is what he's saying in the Mishnah, that even when it comes to Gidin, and Shtori Shikr, that they should be kosher if they're prepared by our Kohen. So he says to them in Sidon, Loy Nechlaku, Rabbi Kiva v'Chachamim, our Kol HaShtori Sa'olim v'Akoris Sholei V'Chavim, Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim, in the generation before us, never argued about all kinds of documents, Ha'olim v'Akoris Sholei V'Chavim, which come from going forth, Sha'afa Pishafasmei and Ovi V'Chavim, Sherim, that even though the signatures are of Goyish witnesses, that they're still kosher, Ba'afilo Gitin Nashim Shkur Avadim, even including Gitin and Shekurim. So therefore, that should prove my point. Both Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim agreed to that. The machlokes between them was only if they're prepared in private hand, not by a court. Rabbi Kiva machshav a Chachamim poislim. That there, Rabbi Kiva says it's kosher, and the Chachamim say it's possible. Chutz v'gidin nashim v'shechur rabadim.
And now he said what?
So Rav Shimon is saying to the Chachamim, how can you tell me in the Mishnah that gidin nashim v'shechur rabadim are possible from our cause? We see that Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim all agreed that if it comes from our cars, it's fine. There's a couple of different ways that Mefarshim discussed what situation are we talking about? Are we talking about when it's prepared by our cars and the names are Seamus Muhakim, that we said before, distinctively Goyish name, and you have Adi Mesira? Well, maybe you can have not. Maybe you can have one or the other of those missing. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, actually, even Gittin and Shkur Avadim would be kosher. Where? Makom Shein Yisrael Chosmin. If you're in a place where Jews don't sign, namely, there are places, both Rashi and Tosfos said, there were places in those days where the Goyim made laws that Jews are not allowed to sign documents. Why? Whatever, they didn't want that Jews should have this kind of official power. So of necessity, therefore, any document, whether it's being prepared by a Beis Din or whether it's being prepared by a Goyim, is going to have to be signed by Goyim. Therefore, that's sort of the equivalent of Seamus Mupatim. Just like when it comes to Seamus Mupatim, if you have a get signed by Burmese and have a dinner and so forth, and you know that it's Goyim, because Jews generally don't use those names, the same way, if you're in a place where all the signers are Goyim, because no Jews are allowed to sign, then you know any document, regardless whether it's signed by Burmese or by some less distinctive name.
Because in the case of Burmese, it's a few individuals we're talking about. Here, we're talking about all the Goyim.
It doesn't matter, though. The point is that if you have a shtar that comes from this area, people know that in this area, in this city, all the shtaris are signed by Goyim, because the authorities don't allow Jews to sign. Well, then, automatically, you know. So then automatically, you won't come to rely on them. You're going to know you're going to need Eidei Mesira.
And Rabbi Shimon and Mirzali Azhar would agree on this? Rabbi Shimon especially?
Well, that's actually what the Gemara doesn't say explicitly, but the question is, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, okay, Makom Shein Yisrael Chosmin, if it's in a place where Jews don't sign, Abu Makom Shein Yisrael Chosmin Lo, but in a place where Jews are able to sign documents, then no, because then Rav Shimon Gamliel would say differently than Rav Shimon. We were saying up until now that Rav Shimon would say, if Seamus Mufakim, if the names are distinctive, then it doesn't matter whether it's a place where Goyim sign or where Jews sign. Either way, Seamus Mufakim are distinctive enough, and well, not enough, to be together with Eidei Mesira, but yeah. Rav Shimon Gamliel would say that no. If it's a place, it doesn't depend whether it's Seamus Mufakim or not, because we're still afraid you may confuse them. It's still very easy to say, once you're allowing Seamus Mupakim in a place where both Jews and Goyim are able to sign, you may not pay attention to that. People may not, the Dayanim or whoever who are arranging the get, may not pay attention to the fact that we need to make sure that the signers are either Jews or distinctively Goyim. They may end up allowing Goyim who don't have distinctive names to sign, and then you'll be back to the old problem that you don't know whether it was done by Jews or by Goyim, and you'll rely on them. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, rather the difference is not between Seamus Mupakim and Seamus Shein Mupakim, but rather between places. If you're in a place where all the signers are Goyim, then fine. If it's not, then not.
Then fine.
Then fine, and then it's okay, because we know any shtar that comes out of such a place, including any debt, is going to have been, signed by Goyim. Therefore, you know you'll need Eidei Mesira. Therefore, you know you'll need Eidei Mesira. You'll know not to rely on the Eidei Mesira. Okay.
And that would be sufficient.
Yeah. So the question is, Makom Sheni Yisrael Choismin Nami, Ligzor Ata Makom Sheni Yisrael Choismin. Why does he say, by the same logic as he's saying that we're not distinguishing between Sheamus from Hawkin and Sheamus Sheen from Hawkin, why don't we say the same thing, we're not distinguishing between a place where Jews sign and a place where Jews don't sign? The answer is Shma B'Shma Mechlep. It's very easy to confuse between names. Again, if you're going to allow Goyim to sign, just sign Gittin or other shtaros, Gittin we're talking about over here, if you're going to allow Goyim to sign Gittin, the Beis Din may get careless and not be careful to only allow in Goyim who have distinctively Goyish names. So therefore, we don't, Shimon Gamliel doesn't want to allow that at all. On the other hand, one place is not easily confused with another. Everybody knows that in a certain place, Jews don't sign shtaros, and therefore, any get that comes from there, they're going to know. So, Shema B'Shema Mislav, Astra B'Astra Lai Mislav. One place is not confused with another. Okay. Speaking of Shema B'Shema Mislav, one name can be confused with another. Astra B'Astra Lai Mislav, one place does not get confused with another. What says Ravina Savalach Shuri Biknufiyasa Dharmoy? Rav Shimon thought that one time there was a place where there were a bunch of goyim gathered together, sort of like a fair or something. It wasn't an officially established court, but it was a large gathering. He thought that if a shtar is prepared in such a place, any of the other shtaris were saying according to the Chachamim, not Gittin, fine, but a regular shtar, that it should be kosher. Well, they're not from our koyz. The answer to Rafam tells them, no, we see it on Mishnah, that it has to be davka our koyz, davka a specifically established court, not something ad hoc like that. Because if it's ad hoc like that, there's still the possibility they may lie, they may take bribes, they may otherwise, they don't have any credibility to be sure, really. Also, some of us talk about the idea that if you have a court that's established by, that's officially established, it's established by government power. Therefore, they're concerned. Besides that, they're afraid of that everybody will know that they're liars if they take bribes or otherwise do false things. They're afraid that they'll get their license revoked by the king. If it's a kinufiyasa over here, if it's a gathering, if it's an ad hoc gathering like this, there's no concern about that. Omar Rava, actually, before I should say that the kinufiyasa over here, even if it's a gathering of judges, imagine here you have a judges' convention. So they're judges on their respective Goyish courts around the country. Nevertheless, they're not officially here as an official court, but rather as a convention, still doesn't work.
Even to that extent.
Yes. Omar Rava, Hai Shtar, if you have a shtar that's written in the Persian language, Demastri Niyale Ba'ape Sadi Yisrael, and it was handed over to the other party in the presence of Jewish witnesses, Magbinin Ve Mibnei Chori. We can use that to collect the chayv, but only from b'nei chorin, only from property that the loiva owns at the time of the payment. You can't use it to collect from the shabbadim, from property that he had previously sold. Now, what the case is that we're talking about over here, what's going on with this shtar parsa, there's a few different opinions. Rashi says that it was written in the Persian language, and it was signed by Goyish witnesses. Persian had yoytis, actually. There's various other possibilities, including one that it wasn't signed at all. That was written in it was written in Persian in a Goyish court, but it wasn't signed. So it's valid to the extent that you can use it to collect from B'nai Chorin, but not from Mishabadim. Question is, V'holo Yadi B'mikra, how does that help? The Edim who watched it being handed over can't read it. Most Jews in those days only knew, they knew Lashon Kodesh, they knew Aramish. Most Jews didn't know Persian, or at least even if they knew the spoken language, they didn't know the written language. You know, then you could compare it to, you know, back in the old country. I mean, Jews spoke Yiddish, which is similar to German. They could probably understand German well enough. They couldn't read and write it, because Yiddish is written in Hebrew characters, and then German is written in Latin characters. Okay, but they may not have been able to. The point is, they may not have been able to read it. So how are these Edim Mesira any good if they can't read what's in the shtar? The answer is Bidiyati. Okay, we have to be talking about that these Edim Mesira do know how to read Persian. Okay, we know that one of the details that makes a shtar, the way that Jewish shtar, there's certain details of how a shtar is supposed to be prepared in halacha. One of them is it has to be written on a material that cannot be forged. Meaning, Rashi says, normally when you make parchment, when you make parchment, and Tosfos points out that this comes into play also when you're making parchment for Sefer Torah, usually the parchment, part of the process of making it is you treat it with gall nuts, which are a growth on oak trees or whatever. They have tannic acid in them that makes not white. Tosfos talks about white. Tosfos talks about something called seed, some kind of plaster or something that they apply to the parchment. No, but what this accomplishes is it makes it actually says interesting expression. Tosfos says it's shocker that it makes the parchment black, but not black but dark. But the point is, what it does is it makes the parchment at that point. You'll notice the difference between a place that was blank versus a place that was erased. So therefore, if you were to write out a shtar and then erase part of it and try to write over the erased part, you would notice that it was erased. The Persians are not careful about that with their shtaris. So how can you accept a Persian shtar when you could have originally written shtar that Reuven owes Shimon $100 and now it was erased and rewritten that Shimon owes Reuven $100 or whatever, you know? It's a letter, and so you don't have that. The answer is bidas pitzan. Okay, so we have to be talking about that, in fact, the parchment that was used was prepared with gall nuts, same as Jewish parchment. So yes, then therefore you have to have any ochel diet. Now at that point, if anything is erased, it will be recognizable. So that's where Tosfos brings up that you have a similar kind of thing with the clock that we use nowadays. Part of the treatment involves soaking the skin and sit in lime for a while, and that has the same effect. That also makes it that any place that's erased will be noticed. You can see it in Sefer Torah nowadays. If you have a place where the sofa had to rub out or scratch off or whatever letters, you notice it.
And that's because
it's been treated. So the Gemara is mentioning gall nuts. Tosfos is mentioning lime. But either way, they have similar effects. How about another one? What about you have another detail of the way that Jewish shtaras are written? You have to have the last line of the shtar, right before the signatures, summarizes what's in the shtar. And the reason for that is, well, such as for example, you write that, there can be a lot of examples. In a get, you write on the bottom line, that's Moshe of Israel, but there's different, in a typical shtar, you write that the so-and-so owes so-and-so so much money, and at the end you write that, we're making a kinyan on what was written above in the shtar.
You summarize,
basically. The point of that is, the point of doing that is, that there's actually that example that you write on the last line, the Khananim in Plenum and Kenyan from so and so, a Kolmat Kosim of Forshlayel, about everything that's specified above. You can see that at the end of Ksuba, for example, is written that way. The idea behind that is there's a concept called Einla Maiden Meshita Achroina, that you can never you don't use that last line to learn anything from it of what the contents of the shtar is. It's basically just there in order to prevent forgeries. Because you want to make sure that nobody writes in anything else above the signatures of the edict or something. So actually, the Gemara mentions over there in Bava Basra one purpose that if you have in that summary, if the body of the shtar says an amount and then that amount is repeated on the last line, but then the part on the top got smudged and you can't read it, then you can use the bottom line to deduce what it said on the top line over there in the smudge. But otherwise usually not. Anyway, so that's how Jewish shtaris have appeared. Goyish shtaris, again, Persians don't bother with that. How do you know that the shtar is valid? Maybe somebody wrote in an extra thing up at the bottom over there, right above the signatures of the Edim, and then you have a problem. Okay, then. So it's bit mahadur. Fine. You're talking about a shtar. It's written in Persian, but other than that, they do that. They follow, they comply with all the halachas of Jewish shtaris. And the question becomes, Yehoshim of Shabbi Nami, if that's the case, why are you saying you can only use the shtar to collect from Bnei Chorim? Use it to collect from Mishabodim as well, just as if it was written in Hebrew. The answer is less like Kola. Yes, but you do have one problem with such a shtar. Because you have, according to Rashi, that's Goyim who are signing it, or according to the other Mephoroshim, that's nobody signing it, it's only Jewish Adi Mesira, therefore, usually the ones who sign the shtar are usually the ones who also get out a coil about it. They inform the public, or not, they don't stand up there and they're in the street, but whatever. They tell one person and the other tells the other what happened in this shtar. That Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, or Reuven sold the property to Shimon, or whatever it is, and therefore there's a coil. Therefore, there everybody eventually hears about it, and therefore what happens is, so what's the whole point behind Mishabodim? The whole point is that Reuven borrows money from Shimon. At that point, he's putting a lien on all of his property. If now, later on, Levi goes and buys property from Reuven, we say Levi should have realized, you know what, he's taking a risk. After all, there is a lien on this. If Reuven defaults on the debt, then Shimon may come take it away from Levi. That only works if there's a curve. Here, where there were Jews, where there wasn't Jews who signed the shtar, they're only watching the Messiah, there's no curve. Therefore, we can't allow him to collect from the Shabbatim, because we can't expect Levi to realize that there's a lien over here. But we can collect from Bnei Chorin. We can collect from Reuven's own property. Okay. But yeah, you can still stay there.
Okay,
so we'll see what we can do. That's
what the Mishnah
says. We'll see what. Yeah. Yes.
So maybe it's time for a week, no?
It's not the first time. It's fine. He'll have his recording.
That's okay.
It's fine. We got to record about the Shabbos first. Okay. Bominator Shlokish Menavyet. Egim Achasuman ala get. What if you have Egim signed on a get? Now, this get comes from Eretz Yisrael. If it came from Kotvot, if you say Befanam Nechtam, and that means that everything was done the right way. But in this case, it comes within Eretz Yisrael. And the names on the get are similar to Goyish names, so we don't know, are they Goyim or are they Jews? Mahu, what would be the din? Is it good enough with Edim Asira? Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan tells him, Loi Bol Yadenu El Lukas Tulus, the only such case that ever came to us, a get that had Goyish sounding names on it, is a get that came with the names Lukas and Lus, and we said it's kosher with Edim Asira. Which dafka lukus velus, so therefore this applies dafka if the names are lukus and lus, the leshchichi yisur of the master b'shasayo, because those are not names commonly used by Jews, those are shemus mepakim, like we said before. No, because before the Gemara was mentioning, actually it said that those were names of Gershon Dayanim, these are not. But besides that also, the Gemara is written in Bavel. The name, the list of names the Gemara had over there, Hurgers, and the rest of them are all names that are typical of Bavel. These that were dealing with Lucas and Lus are in Eretz Yisrael. They're Greek names. So Zolei Shchichi Yisrael, the Maski B'Shmasayu. You don't commonly have Jews who use those names. Abba Shmahas Achrin, Shchichi Yisrael, the Maski B'Shmasayu. But other names from Goyish sources, which Jews commonly use. There's a bunch of Tanoim and Amoraim who have names that derive from Greek. Urkinus, Doisa, and a bunch of others. So those not, because again, you're going to have the same topic as before. You're going to have the same problem. That people are going to think you can rely on the aid of Hasima when you can't. Tosfos, by the way, learned in this whole Gemara over here that the issue is that the issue is a little bit different. If we're going to say that there's Goyim signed on the shtar, then according to the logic, even with Edim Asira, it won't be good. But up until now, we were saying that with Edim, because we're in Missouri for Tosfos, and according to Reb Shimon, you need Shemus Mepakim. So other kinds of names are not. Okay, Avi. So Rosh Lakish asked him for a brayta. Gittin aboyin from Dinithayam, the gittin that comes from overseas. The edim chasum aleim, and you have edim signed on the gittin. Apapishish mesein kishmos every chavim. Even though the names on the get are like the names of goyim, shevin, if they should really be still shabachot blood, mesein kishmos every chavim, because most Jews in the chutzlard have names like the goyim. Rather shocking statement, actually, especially Loshinu Ashram and all that, but that's what we're saying. That most Jews in Chutzlar go by Goyish sounding names. So it sounds like even without Edim Asira, it's coming from the Din of Yam, which means you don't need Edim Asira, you just need Befanenechtem. Maybe not necessarily. Is he going to know? Before Nechtam, but he doesn't know whether they were Jews or Goyim. But the Braith, what he saw people, yeah. But the Braith is not distinguishing between whether it was Lucas or Lewis or any other names. So you see, there shouldn't be that distinction. And he answers him, awesome, kids for 20 times. Well, that's exactly what the Braith is saying. When the Braita is making that distinction, effectively, that the same distinction that Rabbi Yochanan made between Eretz Yisrael and Chofaret, because most Jews, only a get that comes from Eretz Yisrael, only a get that comes from Chofaret is okay in this way, because if it comes from Chofaret, there's more reason to assume that the signers are Jews. The fact that it has Goyish sounding name doesn't matter. Because in any case, we would assume that a get is usually signed by Jews, not by Goyim. And here we have the guy saying b'fanenechtem, so that makes it better. In Eretz Yisrael, where first of all you don't say b'fanenechtem, and second of all it's not common anyway for Jews to bear Goyish sounding names. So then, if you have a get that's signed with Goyish sounding names, they have to be Shemus Mavokim. They have to be distinctive sounding names. Others say that actually the question that Rish Lakish had was not, like we originally said in the Gemara, a question about a get that comes within Eretz Yisrael with Goyish names on it, but rather he was asking about a get that comes from Chutz Lakish with Goyish names on it. And according to that, then he answered him just based on this Braita, straight out, the Braita said straight out, that it's fine. Yeah.